Welcome to the Mile High Podcast. This is your host, Dr. Daniel Knowles. Thank you for joining us. This is our first podcast since the Mile High annual event. So we're grateful for everybody who joined us at Mile High. It was the most attended event we've ever had, most rave reviewed. So thank you for being part of it. Thank you for all of our speakers and exhibitors, and most importantly, the people that make it great, which is the attendees. We look forward to seeing you all there next year, which will be our 10th anniversary. I am super thrilled, and I'm going to share why I'm super thrilled further on in this interview, but I'm super thrilled to have as our guest today to introduce Dr. Gilles LaMarche, who's a phenomenal chiropractor through and through. And he has practiced more than 25 years in Canada. Maybe we'll talk about Canada a little bit. I don't know. But he's an avid student of psychology and philosophy of success. He is the current vice president of university advancement and enrollment at Life University, the largest single campus chiropractic university in the world. And they have some wonderful things going on there that we'll talk about. But more importantly, we're going to talk about chiropractic. Okay.
Hey.
Yeah. So, Gilles, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I'm honored that you invited me, and I'm thrilled to be spending this time with you and with our audience. I know that I have not personally had an opportunity to go to Mile High yet, but I had some of my team members there this year, came back with rave reviews. I always ask my team when they go to an event to submit at least like a half page to one page report. She sent me a full page report of how good the event was, how well received she was, how she felt that Life University was just part of the core group. So I'm looking forward to going next year. Hopefully my schedule will allow it.
Yeah, she was phenomenal. And, you know, people talked about some of the outstanding things that are going on at Life University. Before we do that, let's talk about you a little bit. Let's help people get to know you. You as a soul and you as a chiropractor, okay? So how did you find your way into the chiropractic world?
Well, I discovered chiropractic at the age of 12 because initially, like many people, I had back pain. And my back pain occurred after a teacher pulled the chair from underneath me as a joke. And I landed on my bottom, injured my spine 6 months into it after doing the traditional route, you know, medical, this, that, and the other. Somebody said to my mom, you know, why don't you take me to a chiropractor? And I remember I was there. My mother said, what's a chiropractor? Nobody in my family had been to a chiropractor. And, you know, it's 54 years ago. It's a while back. But nobody in my family had ever been. So anyway, I ended up in a chiropractor's office. And he did a thorough consultation, thorough examination, did x-rays of my spine, came back the next day for a report of findings. And he talked about this word called subluxation. I had never heard that big word, right, for a 12-year-old. What the heck is that? And then he described subluxation's impact on the health of the spine mechanically, but the impact of that mechanical issue on neurological function. And he had an autonomic nervous system chart and peripheral nervous system chart on the wall, and he explained all that. And then he said to my mom, or he asked my mother, did Jill ever get dropped on his head or fall off a change table or something like that as a baby? And I remember my mother starting to tear up a little bit, and she, well, no, but, and then she went on the but, I was a forceps delivery baby. Until then, I didn't know that. When I did have hair, because once upon a time I did have hair, I never had any hair right here. And it's because they had actually tore the side of my head using the forceps. So what we invariably discovered that through the forceps delivery, obviously they saved my life and my mom's life, which is a good thing, but they damaged my spine. And I was, from a musculoskeletal aspect, totally asymptomatic until I injured my back at the age of 12. But I'd always been an unwell child. I always didn't feel good, lethargic, pain in my belly, constipation, indigestion, all these issues. And so this Dr. Ingard was describing the function of the spine and the nervous system and their direct interactions. He then related the direct interactions to organic system function. And to me, that was all news, and it sounded really interesting. And so he suggested a care plan. My mom agreed that I should start care. And I will tell people, every time I tell people about that, when they say, well, I don't believe in chiropractic, I didn't believe it either. All I was hopeful for was that he was going to help me get rid of my back pain. And lo and behold, within a couple months, not only was the back pain completely gone, but everything else was restored to normal. Normal digestion, normal elimination, like everything was working, and I'd never experienced that since birth. And I was like, wow, like a mind-blowing moment of, this is it. This is my calling. And I told him, when I'm big, I'm going to be like you. I'm going to become a chiropractor. And the rest became history, but that's where it all started.
Around what age were you when you told him that?
12.
Okay. So it wasn't long into care.
No, it was like 2 months into care.
Okay.
Three months into care. Right at the beginning, I was like, this is a newfound paradigm for me. Yeah. I didn't even know that paradigm existed. So I started chiropractic care, not believing, except hoping it was going to help me with my back pain. I didn't believe he was going to help me with my digestion. I'd been to like dozens of doctors. They all told my mother, there's nothing wrong with him. It's in his head.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, the reason we have a lot in common then, because it was around that, I'm not going to go into my story, but around that same time is when my mom brought me to a chiropractor for health concerns. And the rest is history. So we'll have another conversation about that at some other time. However, I'd like to ask you about this, which is then, how did you end up in school and where did you go?
Okay, so I'm from Canada. I'm from a little town in northern Canada called Timmins, Ontario. Mm-hmm. And so the north, you know, I automatically ended up going to Toronto. It was the only big city near me, which near me, by the way, was 450 miles. And my neighbor two doors over was the only person I knew that had gone to university. And he went to the University of Toronto. So I applied and got into the University of Toronto to do my undergrad in biology. There was the Canadian Memorial Chiropractic College in Toronto, still is there. And that's the only school I knew that offered chiropractic, obviously way before the internet or anything else. That's where my chiropractor had gone.
Right.
So I went to visit. I applied when the time came to apply. I was accepted.
And that's so often is the case. So often people go to what is the location that's closest to them because that's just what they know. I'll share why I was excited to interview you, which is that one of the reasons was I still have this image in my mind of your smiling face. You probably don't even know this, okay? Which was, it was the first time I was speaking somewhere, and I was speaking at New Beginnings, and you were in the front row, and you were smiling, and I just and just were nodding along, and I was like nervous because I was speaking in front of you.
I recall hearing you speak there, but I'm a lover of life, and when I go to a conference, I want to learn. I want to keep learning.
And you were right there, and you were engaged, right? And also, maybe it was pressure for me. So
You should never feel pressure on me. I'm a judge. I'm always there to support.
And it was an enthusiasm. So I was like, oh, there's important people here like you. So then you've written 9 books.
I think I'm up to 14 now. But yeah.
Oh wow, I've lost count then.
So I became a single father pretty young,
mm-hmm.
and I needed to find something to occupy myself after I put my kids to bed. And so I started writing. I started writing articles, and then I had a few really good mentors that sort of pushed me along, and that had me start writing books. I wrote the first book I contributed to was a chapter with Mark Victor Hansen back in the early mid-80s, I'd say, before Mark was even famous, before he'd written, you know, the first Chicken Soup for the Soul. And so he was my first mentor in that world. And then I just continued to write. And most of the books I've written have been for the chiropractic profession. I've written some that are more generic. Like I wrote a book called The Art of Responsibility because I saw so many people wanting to blame everybody else and not taking personal responsibility for themselves, taking personal responsibility for their health. So I've just had a good time writing books.
Great, great.
And it's been fun.
And you were involved with Parker at some point because the Parker system. Tell me about that.
So my chiropractor said to me, well, if you decide to become a chiropractor, promise me that before you graduate, you go to a Parker seminar.
Ah.
I'm a 12-year-old. What do I know about that? So I said to him, well, what's a Parker seminar? He said, they're going to teach you to be a successful chiropractor. And I looked at him and I said, well, aren't they going to teach me that in school? He said, no. He said, the school's job is to teach you everything you need to learn to pass your board exams and for you to get a license. Your job is to learn to become successful.
Ah.
And you can do that at a Parker seminar. So I always had that at the back of my mind. I remembered that. So as a junior in chiropractic college, I saw an ad for a Parker seminar happening in New York City. Well, Toronto was relatively close to New York City. You know, none of us had very much money, but five other guys and I got in one of our buddies' cars and we drove to New York City. We all shared the same hotel room, six guys. And I went to my first Parker seminar. And back in the day, Jim Parker, the founder, used to be the first and only speaker on Thursday. He would speak for like 3 hours. And he typically would then invite everybody to his suite. Well, I'm sitting in the audience with 3,000 people. And he says, you know, all of you are invited to come to the suite from whatever, this time to this time. So I tell my buddies, so are we going to go up there? Well, I know we're in New York City, man. We're going to party. I was like, yeah, but he invited us. He said, you'll never get in. Look, there's so many people. The room can't be that big. Well, somebody had mentioned that President Reagan had stayed in that suite the weekend before at the New York City Hilton. I thought, I'm going to take a chance. I'm going to go up there. So my buddies went out to party. And my life was changed that night because I went up to the suite. There was like 30 people in the suite. And there were like the big people of the days, the Richard Yannies, the Larry Marksons, the Charles Wards, Kirby Landis. You know, the chiropractic, big successful chiropractors of the day, they were all up there. And I can't remember who was the first one to greet me in the suite as I entered, because obviously I was really, really shy. And he says to me, well, where do you practice? I said, I don't practice. I'm a student. And I told him where I was a student. He's like, oh my gosh, come and meet Dr. Jim. He loves students. So there I was sitting at the feet of a gentleman that many people had as their number one mentor.
Right.
So Jim became my number one mentor, which allowed me to understand what he taught, because I went to three seminars before I graduated. So when I started practice, I hit the ground running, Danny. I mean, there was no struggling period for me in practice. And it's not, you know, to brag. It's just that I learned what somebody taught me to do, and I didn't try to reinvent the wheel. I did what he told me. And I went on to build my visibility in my community, even though I was extremely shy. I used to talk English with a really heavy French accent still back then, you know, because I went to French school my entire life. So I still had a really heavy French accent, but they taught me that I needed to tell the chiropractic story. And the chiropractic story that I should tell was my own chiropractic story. So that's how I started my practice. And within a couple of years into practice, I started getting invited to speak at Parker seminars. So I was a regular on the Parker seminar speaker circuit for a long time. And then in the spring of 2003, I started having major issues breathing. I got diagnosed with a terminal condition, and you'll relate to that. Mine was primary pulmonary hypertension and cardiomegaly. So my heart had expanded 2.5 times its normal size because my body was adapting to the stress of the pulmonary hypertension, right? Back pressure from the lungs into the right ventricle. And medicine told me, it was the first time I'd gone to a medical doctor since I was the age of 12. And now I was 48 years old. I'd never been back to an MD after that. I always went just to my chiropractor. And one of my assistants told me one day, I'm so afraid you're going to die in front of me. And she was in tears because she could tell I was struggling breathing. Anyway, she called one of my buddies who was a medical doctor, ended up in his office. Long story, multiple doctors, to get told that the only way I would survive is if I agreed to a double lung and heart transplant.
Wow.
And I was like, whoa.
Wow.
So I researched the condition at depth. I researched the procedure at depth. And I made the conscious decision that I wasn't going to do it.
Wow.
I thought, no, I've had a beautiful life. If this is God's calling for my life, I'm okay. And so I made the conscious choice to retire from practice on the 14th of April in 2004.
Got it.
And I went home to continue to prepare myself to die. By then, I knew I was going to die. And I will tell you, for a 6-month period, I was a heretic. I succumbed to the half hourly use of Ventolin.
Mm-hmm.
Every 30 minutes, I would pump 2 or 3 puffs of Ventolin in my body while I was in the office so I could breathe long enough to adjust the next group of patients, because otherwise I couldn't breathe. And I knew that this couple were going to take my practice over, but it was going to take a number of months for them to be able to transition from where they were in Canada to move, et cetera. So that's why I say I became a heretic, because from the age of 12, I had never even taken an aspirin. No garbage in my body whatsoever. So I retired, like I said, on the 14th of April in 2004. And on the 15th of May, 31 days later, I woke up And the first thought in my head was, you're an idiot. There was a bunch of words before that that aren't not nice. We wouldn't say them in the podcast. But you're a beep, beep, beep idiot. You've been preaching the chiropractic paradigm of health and healing for 25 years. There must be something seriously wrong with your spine and nervous system. And some of you listening in might say, what a loser. Why would you even think that? Well, that's the thought that came into my head. And the next thought was, well, how could that be? I get checked by a chiropractor every week or two. But it was the third thought that really awakened me. But never by the same chiropractor. In that moment, I realized I had not been a practice member in any practice. I got checked and adjusted, if necessary, by whatever buddy I was happy to have lunch or dinner with, or going for a beer with, or meeting at a conference. Somebody would check me. Next time would be somebody else. And then I realized, oh my gosh, I haven't had like a thorough spinal or neurological exam in probably 20 years or more. I hadn't had an x-ray of my spine in 20 years or more. So when all the noise died down, I reached over. I was still in bed, reached over that phone beside the bed, called my office manager, my former office manager, because now she was their office manager. And I made an appointment, went in as a new patient. And they discovered that my spine looked pretty good, except from C7 to T4. I was a complete mess from C7 to T4. And again, important for people to understand, right? In that outside world, I had no musculoskeletal symptoms whatsoever. I had no pain in my back. I had no pain in my neck. I had no pain anywhere. I just couldn't breathe because I was dying. Or I was dying because I couldn't breathe, right?
Right.
It was in both directions. And so they discovered that. I started getting adjusted 5 days a week. And by the end of August, so that was in May, by the end of August, my pulmonary pressure had dropped from 57 millimeters mercury of pressure to 27. The normal for those listening in is 15. So when I started care, my pulmonary pressure was four times greater than normal, which means my lungs were pushing back into my heart. Four times greater than the heart was made to pump, which is why the body, with its innate wisdom, did what? It adapted. It caused my heart to grow, to push. And the symptoms started when there was just no more room for my heart to expand anymore. So by the end of August, as I said, pulmonary pressure dropped to 27. By the end of 1 year, pulmonary pressure normal. By the end of 2 years, normal size heart. Why? Some people say it's a miracle. No, the human being is the miracle. We get to work with that substance.
Right.
We have the soul that makes up the human being.
Right.
And I'm fully healed from it. So now I've got plastic deformity at T2. So I do subluxate at T2 easy, very easily. So adjusting sort of became something I probably should not do anymore. And at the end of that 2 year period when I was completely well, I was contemplating going back into practice. And I fell off a stepladder, broke six ribs, was in a medically induced coma for 12 days, all the rest of that stuff. So when I came back to it, I was like, well, maybe I'm not supposed to go into practice. So what am I supposed to do? When I healed from this, now October, I get a call from the president of Parker University at the time and asked me if I was willing to go speak at a seminar. And I went to speak at a seminar in Cleveland. Then he asked me if I was willing to go and help them revive their Parker Seminar Series. I thought didn't think I could ever live in the South because it would be too warm for me being a Northerner. And I went as a volunteer for 3 months. I loved it, helped rebuild Parker Seminar, stayed there until July of 2012. So that's what got me in the education piece. And then left there in July 2012. Dr. Riegman, who was the president of Life at the time, reached out to me, I think in May of 2013. And I decided to take a position here at Life University in the fall of 2013. So I've been here 8 years now.
So 2012, I had the honor of only going to one Parker program. I would have liked to have gone more. Maybe I went to two. I don't know. But this was good to talk about Life University. It was when Jim Parker was still alive and he was doing programming. He did one in Atlanta, which he had not done a program in Atlanta. And I was so impressed with that experience. I was already in chiropractic school at that point, and I spent a decent amount of time connecting with Carl Parker because him and my dad had a relationship and they were good friends. Carl was such a sweet person and really had great conversations with him. And the whole Parker legacy is amazing. Now, that brings us to Life University. Excited to have you being as the vice president of Life University. There's exciting things going on at Life University. And how are things going with, since you're involved with enrollment, how are things going with enrollment and Life University growth?
Things are actually going very, very well. You know, I mean, this is, I guess we're all thinking it's sort of post-pandemic or hopefully at the end of all this stuff. We navigated through that extremely, extremely well. Our enrollment numbers are excellent. In October, we took in our largest class in, I think, some 20 years.
Wow, in 20 years, the largest class in 20 years.
Originally, 226 were enrolled. Somehow, some issues occurred in the first couple weeks. We ended up at 223.
Wow, amazing.
So still 223 students, and we have four entrances per year. Our fall quarter is always our largest quarter, but our October 2021 quarter, we had 223 chiropractic students matriculate and begin their doctor of chiropractic program. And I was on the phone on a Zoom call with my team today on the enrollment side, and we're trending extremely well as it relates to our winter quarter, which obviously is going to happen in January. And our January numbers are usually smaller because not as many students want to start a program, you know, in the middle of the winter. But our numbers are trending better than they have in maybe a decade.
That's so excellent. You know, it's kind of like practice. You know, I think as a chiropractor that practices, I think things often through that lens. So it's like on the other side, the pandemic, that many businesses, many chiropractors, many chiropractic colleges had a slowdown with enrollment, and that's not surprising. And on the other side of that, you watch which ones shoot up, you know, which ones have the enrollment increases and which practices have their best years ever after what has gone on in 2020 and 2021. So I'm glad to hear that for Life University and for the students that are, you know, going to get a great chiropractic education. So what
my understanding, Danny, is that the schools that have the majority of the schools that have an increase in their enrollment right now on the DCP side, the doctor of chiropractic program side, are the Vitalistic Principles schools.
Yes. You know, I saw a chart once when I was on the board of Sherman. As you know, I served on the board of Sherman. At one point, I saw a chart of where the enrollment was down and where the enrollment was up across all the chiropractic schools. And it's so interesting. The schools that were closest to the principal had the largest enrollment. I thought, that's just like practice.
Exactly. And it's, you know, the pandemic proved that, didn't it?
Right, right.
Because all my principal chiropractic friends, their practices are, some of them have said, you know, 30 years in practice, I had my best year ever in 2020.
Right.
And 21 is going to be even bigger.
I had a lot of that. A lot of people have that. And yes, some, not for everyone, but there's been many that you've seen that. And it depended also on the location and what their restrictions or mandates were in their individual area. And so what are some exciting things that you're excited about and energized about relative to student life at Life University?
Well, we're just completing the feasibility study for a capital and endowment campaign. So we'll see what that brings us, because we've got, you know, some pretty robust plans on continuing to, you know, improve the university, deliver higher quality services and more services to our students. We'd love to build a student center. There's all sorts of ideas, obviously, on the table. We currently have 712 students who actually reside on campus, because we have a DC residence of 2-bedroom apartments. We have an undergrad residence as well, which is more like an undergrad dorm style. And that's the newest building we put on our campus 3 years ago. So that is going extremely well. We've continued to improve our virtual anatomy lab. We were the first school on the planet of any healthcare school to have 8 anatomage tables, which is virtual anatomy. And we had version 1.0 and continued to update the software as they were updating it and improving the software. And this summer, we updated all of those tables to their newest version, which I think is 7.2. And so the learning experience is phenomenal. There are 5 digitized corpses. So these are people that one time were alive. Their corpses were all digitized, and through a software have created these beautiful anatomical specimens that are phenomenal. And the learning outcomes for virtual anatomy is much, much greater. I can't give you the exact percentage, but much greater than dissection, for example. So we've got an extremely beautiful, brand spanking new virtual anatomy lab because we're able to upgrade it all. And then during the pandemic, actually prior to the pandemic, our research department was working at creating a mannequin that could simulate an adjustment that could also simulate a subluxation. And they worked on that for about 3 years. And during the pandemic, they actually built 20 of those mannequins, which we call PAT. PAT stands for palpation and adjustment trainer, available nowhere else on the planet. They were developed here. They were built here. Actually, they were built about 20 feet behind the wall where I'm sitting right now during the pandemic. So we actually built a PAT lab. It's a very advanced technology. There are 67 sensors, I believe, 67 or 69 sensors along the spine and pelvis. And each mannequin is hooked up to its own computer screen with a pretty, easy basic software, but you can tell exactly where you're palpating, or the professors can direct the student, locate based on anatomical landmarks, locate the spinous process of L5 or whatever they want, and turn the screen away and then show the student where they're at. So this is not to replace what you and I did in school in palpation, but it's to add to it, to start the process. And that's also where they're going to learn to develop their skills, their adjusting skills, because the mannequin is made with the closest possible similarities to the human body. And I would tell you that if you come to life and you get an opportunity to palpate and work with one of these mannequins, you'll say it just feels like a very fit male adult. It's how they built them. Mm-hmm. So hopefully in time, as they work out all the details, we're going to be able to make those available to other chiropractic institutions. But for now, they're ironing out sometimes, little issues that need to be tweaked. But the students are thrilled with the experience. So those are two of the technology pieces that we have at Life that I think is just adding. And obviously, we're not taking away from the hands-on. We are a hands-on profession. We are a heart-to-heart profession. We got to maintain that connection with human beings. But you probably remember, getting beat up pretty bad in technique class, because I remember getting beat up pretty bad. So our hope is that as we work our students into learning that way, then instead of learning to thrust on a rubber tire, which is how I learned it, and then on my student friends, that they're actually learning on a mannequin, very similar to how people learn to do CPR mm-hmm. on a mannequin. So they have built this amazing palpation and adjustment trainer.
Wow, that's very exciting. And it's very exciting to see a vitalistic-focused chiropractic school thriving. And I want to see all of them thrive.
Absolutely.
Very important right now. The humanity needs more chiropractors, more so even more than now. There's a shortage of chiropractors. There's no shortage of spines distorted, but there's a shortage of chiropractors.
You got that right.
So let me ask you this, success. So since you were very involved with Parker's System for Success, and you're a successful practitioner and helping students be successful, as you said, they don't necessarily learn that as much in school as we all would wish we would. And that's the case for every chiropractic school, because their focus is making sure that they can be licensed. What are some keys that you advise people they want to be successful in practice? Maybe some things you learned being involved with Parker, or things you learned being part of Life, or just the School of Hard Knocks when you were in practice?
Well, like I said to you, I was extremely fortunate to have Jim Parker as my mentor, and I never struggled in practice. Mm-hmm. So I hit the ground running. What did I do? And I will tell you that what he told me to do still works today. I handed out 1,000 business cards, one at a time, before my doors ever opened. Mm-hmm. All I did was I would meet people. I'd introduce myself. I'd tell them I didn't try to tell them the chiropractic story. I would just say, I'm the new chiropractor in town. If you've seen construction going on at the corner of George and 8th Street, that's my practice being built. I'm due to open, you know, July 5th or whatever it was. And I said, if I can ever help you and your family, I'd be happy to help you. Here's my card. That's what I did 1,000 times before I ever opened my doors. And then for the remainder of the year, I handed out another 4,000 cards. So what I was told is that in your first 12 months, you want a lot of people to know you. So recommendation, hand out 5,000 business cards. I thought that was crazy. The printer I went to thought I was crazy for spending that kind of money, you know, printing 5,000. He said, you don't understand. You're new in business. You don't spend money like that. That's crazy. I was like, my mentor said. And so I tell people all the time, find yourself a really, really good mentor that you trust, who is successful, who you can model. And then don't try to reinvent the wheel. Model what he or she teaches you. Do it exactly the way they teach you. I told you earlier, I was super shy. And another mentor there that I met at Parker was Dr. Richard Yenny, who practiced in Kansas City, Missouri for some 60 plus years. And Richard had said to me, you know, he asked me what got you to chiropractic school. I already shared the story with you and your audience. And then he said, well, you need to learn to tell that to everybody. I said, oh no, I could never do that. I'm like way too shy. And then he said to me, pointing his finger and sticking his index into my chest, he said, what gives you the right to know a truth and not share it? If you don't share this with people, some people are going to die. Some people aren't going to get well because you never take the time to tell them. In other words, like, don't be such a pussy. Learn to tell the truth. And he said, again, what gives you the right to know truth and not share it? And I was like frozen in time because I was shocked. Number one, I just met that man maybe 20, 30 minutes before. He's poking me hard in the chest. And it was on this third or fourth time that he asked the question. I said, nothing. Nothing gives me the right to know truth and not share it. And he said, that's right, young man. Mm-hmm. I said, so how do I do that? Like, how do I learn to not be shy anymore? Mm-hmm. And he said to me, when you go back to Toronto, you're going to go into the Yellow Pages, right? Those big books that used to exist before these things, before the internet. He said, find a Toastmasters club and learn to develop your public speaking skills. So I joined.
I did.
You did?
I did. Yep. Rochelle and I, someone told us to do that somewhere along the line. Maybe five people told us that. But at some point while we were in school, we went to the Toastmasters Club in Spartanburg when I was at Sherman.
So I joined a Toastmasters Club. And while I was at Toastmasters Club, one of the comments that came to me is that if you want to be a good public speaker, you're going to need to learn to speak English without an accent. So, well, how do I do that? I've been talking like this, me, like for 20 something years there. How do I change that, eh? So, you know, they suggested that I watch, and I never watched the TV much, but I watched Dan Rather every night. He was the most famous, you know, newscaster of all time, certainly during that time. And he enunciated. So when he spoke, he moved his lips this way. Yes. And so I started speaking English by enunciating very, very clearly the way Dan Rather did it. And I would literally just watch him on TV.
You're going to find this very funny. You're making me laugh. not because I'm laughing at you, but I, as a New Yorker, had a very, very thick New York accent. I grew up in the Bronx. Everybody was either from the Bronx or Brooklyn. Okay. And then when I went to college, I wanted to be on the radio. So I had to learn how to speak without a New York accent.
Interesting, right? What, you know, we didn't even know that even after having no lunch together a couple of times, that we've had a similar path that's actually led us in the direction of where we've been brought to. But again, I didn't try to reinvent the wheel. I was told, if you want that, do this. You want to do this
right.
way.
Right. Yep. Exactly.
And then to tell the chiropractic story, you know, to do a thorough consultation, thorough examination, to do x-rays, that's why I was trained. That's what I did. To not adjust on the first visit, to prepare a written report of findings, to deliver the report of findings to the patient, to make recommendations equivalent to the recommendations that you would make if the person sitting in front of you was your mother, father, brother, sister, child, or spouse.
Right.
So every recommendation I made, every time I wrote a care plan, I would see, you know, so for example, I look at you, if you came in, I say, okay, roughly my brother's age, If that was my brother showing up with his spine and nervous system in that shape, what would I tell him would be to his advantage? And what care plan would I tell him? And that's how I delivered every care plan. And what happened blew me away, because what I guess people call a conversion rate was almost 100%. Mm-hmm. I remember one patient who said, no, I don't think that's for me. I don't want to come here because I'm that one guy in a million that, you know, is not going to get results. So I'm not going to start. But people, if you're authentic, if you're genuine, if you tell them based on what you would tell a loved one, if that loved one was sitting in front of you instead of that patient, they feel that. Mm-hmm. They feel the unique realness that you offer them, if that's even a word. They feel how real you are. And they start care. Now, what you also have to do, which my mentor said, you got to be so good. You got to practice, and you should practice your skills 10, 15 minutes every single day, even now in practice. So even when I was in practice, I would warm up 10, 15 minutes every morning. I would pop the drops on my table and I would warm up. You know, I would prepare my mind and my heart to serve before, but then I was physically would prepare myself so that the first patient, the first practice member that I got on that table, I was already ready to deliver the goods.
Yes.
And when you're ready, they get the results. And when they get the results, guess what happens? They build your practice for you. Jim said to me, the magic is in serving at a very, very high level your first 250 patients, make them all understand chiropractic for a lifetime, in which case they then become a practice member, because there's a difference between a patient and a practice member, in my opinion. They were a patient in my practice until they chose lifetime care. So do everything you need to do to get great results, and then let them be the ambassadors. Let them build your practice.
Right.
Of course, you got to continue to deliver the goods to the people that they send you.
Right.
That's how I built my practice, Danny. And it wasn't that hard.
There are so many important things that you said. I really hope people listen to this and then listen to it again. One of the important things, one of the many important things that you said that I focus on, there were actually a lot of what you said I do. However, one thing that's super important is that the person has an exam, they evaluate something, that they do an objective indicator of some kind, have the person come back to see those results, and then gets their first adjustment. That one simple process, so few people do that. So many people just, I'll lay them down on the table and adjust them from the beginning and don't even do any objective outcome assessments. And I'm a big stickler for that, to make sure that you're actually delivering what you say you're delivering and you're measuring that there's an outcome. You know, otherwise, you're doing the best work you can do.
Otherwise, what happens, if the patient gets the results that they thought they would get, they're gone, right?
Right.
If they get better after one adjustment, some people symptomatically are better after one or two adjustments. It happens all the time, but not every time. Mm-hmm. So if they get what they came for and you didn't take an opportunity to educate them, then they're gone.
And the thing is, they lose out because they don't get chiropractic.
Exactly. So if we don't do a good job at teaching them the value to impact their life for the rest of their life. So I saw every patient that came into my practice as a potential lifetime chiropractic practice member, whether my practice or somebody else's practice. I wanted them to get to buy in to the lifetime idea that chiropractic is not an event. Chiropractic is a healthcare strategy. It's not an event. And if you adjust them on the first visit, you're making it an event. And often I talk to a lot of chiropractors, they can't figure out why the person drops out after 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 adjustments. So, because they have no idea who you are and what you're delivering. You got to teach them how different you are.
Yep. And that's a very important thing, is event versus process completely. Because people are conditioned, funny that I use that word, conditioned that healthcare is an event. Right? Or the disease process, the disease is an event. Or a lack of health is an event, and getting well is an event. You know, it's a pill, potion, lotion, surgery, procedure, versus it's a process of health and well-being that's developed, you know, and engaged in and invested in and put time and energy. You put energy into something, it thrives. And if you don't, then it doesn't thrive. So, yes, you know, I really, again, very grateful for your conviction, commitment to chiropractic in all the different hats you've worn over the years. Since right now your point of service is students through Life University, and obviously that's still serving humanity because you know you're serving humanity through those students. What do you want people to know? Last things you'd like to share about chiropractic or Life University?
Well, you know, one of my favorite quotes, I have a lot of favorite quotes, but one of my favorite quotes is, be the change you wish to see in the world. And we know that the world is in a crisis. It doesn't matter what country, and there's a crisis somewhere, somehow in every country. And you could complain all day long. You could choose to spend tons of time on social media complaining, being negative if that's what you choose, but that's not going to solve anything.
Right.
So I invite all of you to bring yourself back to the joy, the inspiration that you felt either the day you got accepted into chiropractic college or the day you graduated or the day you laid your hands on your first patient in your own practice or the first person that actually paid you for care, whatever that stimulation of joy and true bliss, wherever that comes from for you, I'm asked, bring yourself back there and make a decision on what am I going to do to stay there? What am I going to do to feed myself and the people around me with love and joy and bliss and understanding and education so that people can see possibility rather than impossibility? I share with you, Danny, before we got on, and we said, how's life at life in my own life? So my life is like complete bliss, except I have not seen two of my children and their spouses and three of my grandchildren for two freaking years. That's a long time. I've got three kids. So my oldest son's a chiropractor, practices in Chicago. So I get to see them, but I haven't seen the other two. I haven't seen my sisters. I haven't seen my nieces. I haven't seen my nephews, my cousins. That sort of sucks. Mm-hmm. That's not what I focus on. I focus on what I can do. Mm-hmm. I focus on what I can do to make me feel good. Mm-hmm. And I will tell you that affirmations, I never understood why affirmations work. I just did them because my mentor told me I should do them. And then I met Joe Dispenza. And then I read Joe's work. And then I read some of your dad's work. And, you know, I've read the work of all these people that talk about the mind influencing physiology. And I brought myself to understand why affirmations work. So, you know, they're just the words you say to yourself or that others say to you that you act upon and that act upon you. So my request of all of you is please pay attention to who you're renting space to up here. Mm-hmm. Start thinking possibility and start delivering that message of possibility. We know that people under regular chiropractic care have a greater opportunity to thrive in all aspects of their life. All aspects, right? Physical, right. Mental, and spiritual health. Let's keep teaching that. There are more people looking for you today than ever before. I've heard for over 40 years, there's never been a better time to be a chiropractor. And I've believed it all along because I've always had a good time as a chiropractor. But now, oh my gosh, I believe it even more than ever before. There's never been a better time to be a chiropractor right now. Why? Because the people out there are looking for you. They just don't necessarily know they're looking for you. Right. They're looking what you have to offer. And if you don't tell them who you are and what you have to offer, they may never know.
So important. So important. And it costs you nothing other than opening your mouth.
Yes, sir. Tell the story wherever you can. Invite people into a conversation. And for God's sakes, just be kind. Be kind. Be gentle. You know, the word that we started with at Life University when this pandemic struck the world was, and I'm trying to think the word that Dr. Scott used, civility. Mm-hmm. He said, I'm just asking all of you to be civil. Not everybody's going to agree with your position. Some people are going to be afraid. Don't destroy them. Invite them and be civil and be kind, but invite them to learn what you could teach that could, that will, when they don't know it, I would say that could change your life. when they understand it and they make a decision to follow you, it will change their life. Guaranteed. I've experienced tens of thousands of times, as you have, Danny, and many people on this call. So it's not about being boastful, but stop being quiet.
Right.
Stop being quiet and start being a little bit louder, not in a boastful, arrogant way, but in a service consciousness way. In chiropractic, I was raised with the philosophy of loving service, my first technique. If you ever visit Park University, you will see that statement at the base of the statue of Dr. Jim Parker, because that was his number one statement. You know, make loving service my first technique. When I came to Life University, I discovered the words lasting purpose, to give, do, love, serve from your own abundance with no expectation of return. And I said to someone, different words, exact same philosophy. Because what I didn't know at the time was that Dr. Sid Williams, the founder of Life University, happened to be a mentee of Dr. Jim Parker. Jim Parker, from what I've discovered, was Dr. Sid's number one mentor early on in his life. Mm-hmm. And now under the guidance of our current president, Dr. Rob Scott, who is, you know, extremely well-educated, a BS, a DC, two masters, a PhD in physiology, and also a diplomate in chiropractic philosophical standards. So Dr. Scott understands chiropractic philosophy. He understands the science of vitalism, and he understands the world of science. When you bridge all that together in the leader of an institution, you have a powerful leader who leads by example and certainly leads by building a great team around him and is extremely supportive. So I'm like thrilled, honestly, to come to the office every single day. I look up to the heavens when I drive on campus every day. I was like 110 beautiful, luscious acres. I just go, thank you, God, for putting me on this path. I'm so grateful. And so I live in that state of gratitude. And I would invite all of you every morning to decide or pay attention to what you could be grateful for in that moment and work at keeping that state. Keep that state of gratitude every single day, all day long with you. I'm reaching into my pocket because there's something I carry with me all the time. And I carry a heart-shaped stone in my pocket all the time, and it's a gratitude stone. And whenever I put my hands in my pocket every day, you know, I just remind myself of all the reasons I have to be grateful. And since it's the first thing I put into my pocket in the morning, it's the first thing I focus on consciously, just to be grateful. And the words that I input into my brain consciously first thing in the morning is, I greet this day with love in my heart. Every person, every situation, every circumstance. That's how I set the tone for my day. So that's the affirmation that I put into my head. I'm going to greet this day with love in my heart, just loving service. Every person that I meet, every situation that I face, even if it appears to be harsh, difficult, every circumstance. Do I succeed 100% of the time? No. But do I succeed most of the time because I actually choose to input that into my brain? Yes, because you are the director of that film that you play in your brain every day. Don't let anybody else tell you any different. You're the director. You're the producer of the film. You don't like what you're seeing? Change it. Rewrite the script. You have the ability to rewrite the script.
And that is how you change spines and lives and minds. And when you become a chiropractor, that's what your role is, to change spines and lives and minds.
Absolutely agree. 100% with you, my friend.
You don't necessarily realize that at that point, but then you realize after a while, so take care of, well, that's what you do. So thank you for your service to humanity, to Life University, to life, and to chiropractic and to chiropractic students around the world and all the hats that you've worn over the years. Really appreciate someone who's given that kind of energy into service. I think your mentors would look back, though many of them are not here now. We've lost some great ones over the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. Would look back and be proud of you. So thank you for that. And thank you all for joining us on the Mile High Podcast. We look forward to seeing you all in June for Mile High 10. And thank you again, Dr. LaMarche, for your service. And everyone,
it was my pleasure. an honor to be with you today, and certainly my honor to serve our profession and humanity. And thank you for the wonderful work that you're doing, along with your beautiful wife and your team, your seminar team, your practice team. And I know you've been serving at a very high level for a long time. So grateful for you as well, my friend.
Thank you. And everyone, may this be your path to serving bigger, better, and impacting more lives. And keep changing spines, lives, and minds with chiropractic. See you on higher ground in June 2022.